Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips on the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th day of September, Anno Domini 2019. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. At least for those of you who survived Friday the 13th.
And a full moon.
And a full
moon. Although
yeah.
The full moon wasn't actually until 12:32 a.m. our time on
right.
The 14th.
Yeah, it was shine close. On, it was close enough.
Shine on, harvest moon.
Oh, and
up in the sky.
Condolences to Eddie Money's family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't he have a song about the moon? Fly me? No.
No.
All right. So, nothing happened this week, really, of any interest.
Not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot.
Mm-mm.
Although, like clockwork, Apple has used its annual September event to announce a new generation of iPhones. But they also crammed a bunch of other stuff in there for good measure, and there was a lot. So, I've tried to condense it down just to a few bullet points. Apple Arcade, the company's take on an all-you-can-eat Netflix for games-type service, will launch on September 19th, somebody's birthday, I believe.
Yeah.
In 150 countries, it'll cost $5 a month for a family subscription and order a one-month free trial. The question is, what games will they have because they're so late to the market?
Well, they say it's all new games.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
The one they showed on stage was Frogger.
Yeah.
An updated Frogger.
Yeah, that's a new game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apple TV Plus will start rolling out on November 1st, and like Apple Arcade, will cost $5 a month for a family subscription. Oh, and as a bit of added surprise, all new iPhones, iPad, Macs, and Apple TVs will come with 1 year of Apple TV Plus for free, which is good because it's a bit light on content, too, right now. I'm sure it will be a lot better. They've got Jason Momoa about how good the show will be, I don't know, and how they fit into the already ridiculously crowded entertainment space. I don't know, but we'll see. As for the iPad, as the iPad moves into its seventh generation, the 9.7-inch model is being bumped up to 10.2 inches. It'll have a Retina display, a smart connector to connect it with a full-size keyboard, and will work with the first-gen Apple Pencil. And they're keeping the home button. It'll cost $330 or $300 for students. Apple Watch Series 5 now has an always-on display. It's also getting a built-in compass and an international emergency calling feature that lets you call emergency services in 150 countries by pressing and holding the side button. Apple says the battery should last about 18 hours per charge. It'll start at $400 or $500 for the cell-enabled models, and thank heaven, ceramic is back. Of course, there are the new iPhones. You can't get an Apple event in September without new iPhones or three, right? The iPhone 11 is a 6.1-inch display, a new dual-camera system on the back. The flash is 36% brighter. Does that mean the old flash was crappy or just this is just so much better?
So much better.
Okay, good. Good to know.
It's the best flash they've ever put in a smartphone.
Sure. It has a new night mode. I love night mode. I've had night mode on my Pixel phone. I love night mode. The front camera can do 60 frames per second 4K. Although that will fill up your phone in about 30 seconds, but you can still do it, and that's the important part. And slow motion video comes in black, green, yellow, purple, red, and white, and starts at $700. The iPhone 11 Pro has three cameras rather than two. All three cameras can shoot 4K at 60 frames per second, filling up your phone three times faster. The Pro has a 5.8-inch display, while the Pro Max comes in at 6.5 inches. While they didn't give a specific battery life estimate, Apple says the Pro will get 4 more hours of life per charge when compared to the iPhone XS Max, or XS Max as I call it, while the Pro Max will get 5 more hours. A new Deep Fusion feature uses machine learning for dramatically improved low-light shots. Again, I've had that on my Pixel phone. They do all kinds of processing. It's amazing. You will love that. The Pro will start at $1,000, while the Pro Max we'll start at $1,100. Are you hot to buy an $1,100 phone? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's only $1,450 if you max it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just...
And then drop it.
Yeah. My Pixel phone finally died. The battery just... Yeah, exactly.
Yours did just what mine did.
Yeah.
And if we had been able to, like we were talking before, switch out the phone or the battery. Yeah.
Yep. Well, it about 2 weeks ago, it started dying at 30%. Then last week, the week later, it died at 40%. And then last Monday, I went to take a picture of my cat and the phone was over 50%. I hit the camera button and the phone died. I'm not a statistician, but I can see where that trend is going.
Yeah. Maybe your phone just doesn't like cats.
That may be it. Yeah. So I went on Tuesday and got a new phone. Yeah. Yeah. No, this was the orange tabby.
Oh, okay.
But still, so I got a new phone, but, and you know, it was only $480, which is about a third the price of the high-end Pixel.
Yeah, these other phones.
Apple.
Did they try to sell you?
Pro?
Did he try to sell upsell?
Oh, they tried to upsell me everything. Everything. I could walk out of there with their car if they'd have said yes.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, the three is better than the 3A.
Yeah.
How so?
No, to be honest with you, I had a lovely young lady named Cassandra, and she said, yeah, I've got a Pixel 3a XL. I love it. You're going to love it. So we really did have a nice time. The other problem was, though, you know, they connect those two things, and my battery was at 95% on my old phone. Mm-hmm. A minute later, it died. So I had to do everything by hand, which was a pain in the neck.
Yeah,
or Wi-Fi. Yeah.
So we might as well get back to these things.
And isn't the Pixel 4 coming next month?
The what?
The Pixel 4.
Yes, I wasn't going to spend $1,000 for any phone.
Yeah, no,
from anybody. $450, $470 gave me everything I need in a phone. Amazing night sight, amazing portrait mode.
I can't find one bad thing anybody has ever said about the phone.
Yep. I had lunch with a friend of mine on Wednesday, and he was talking about how, you know, this new phone, the new iPhone. And so I said, yeah, you're going to love portrait mode. He said, you don't have portrait mode. He said, you don't have portrait mode. I'll show you. Yeah. So I took a picture, and I showed him that I had both. You know, what portrait mode does is it blurs the background.
Yep.
So takes the two person pops.
It
takes one picture, and then it processes it. And because this is a slightly slower processor, it takes a second or two.
Wait, we're older. We don't have to do it fast.
Right. So he was actually...
We need to slow down.
He was both very impressed and kind of angry at the same time. But
One of the things they did from a marketing standpoint, which a lot of people were kind of expecting, the iPhone now starts at only $700. The iPhone Pro is $1,000.
Yeah.
And they kept last year's model for $600 and 2 years ago model for $450. And for depending on what you're upgrading from, so if you have a 6 or earlier, you know, upgrading to a two-year-old 8 is a really decent upgrade for $400. But if you have the XS, you're not probably going to want the 11. Unless you're big into photography.
If you're big into photography, that's three lens, the phone for you. Absolutely.
Yeah, the telephoto lens, the wide-angle lens, and the ultra-wide-angle lens.
They call that you can go out and buy cameras.
No, but that's just it.
For less than $1,000.
Then you got to carry two things.
This friend I had supper with on Wednesday predicted, and I completely agree with him, predicted that people will make full-length feature films. Yep. Using an iPhone.
They had a couple of directors on stage that are doing just that.
Because you could buy, for the price of the cameras that you buy, this is actually cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And has essentially the same quality. Now, you don't have nearly the amount of storage and et cetera, et cetera. But for actually taking the movie, you can buy three or four of these, stick them on stands, do whatever you got to do.
They actually,
then buy the giant $50,000iMac Super Pro Whiz
to do the rest of your editing.
To do the editing.
They even showed some of the a special program that I can't remember the name of it offhand. It was only $20 that the directors are using for documentaries. And it shoots from the front camera and the back camera at the same time.
Right.
So normally with a documentary, you shoot your subject, and then you go back and shoot you reacting to your subject later.
As you're
asking a question.
Yeah,
right.
Interviewing.
Right. Or you have to have multiple cameras shooting both at the same time. And right. So they were saying this is going to be a documentarian's dream.
Yeah, because
really now you
is.
Shoot everything at once.
Yep.
Again, assuming you have the storage.
Yep.
All right. Ed has been waiting patiently
get
on the
bigger
phone.
One.
Yeah. Has been waiting patiently on the phone from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Good morning, guys. I have absolutely no interest in the new iPhone.
Yeah. do you want to hear more about the Pixel 3 AXL? No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm quite content. I was actually very content with the flip phone until I started to have to text.
Yeah.
But I actually use a phone for calling people.
What?
I know. It's outrageous.
Get off the phone. Next caller.
He's
actually,
the one.
He is, yeah, he's calling us now, right? On your flip phone.
What can we do for you, Ed?
Okay. I have an older Chromebook that just got an alert on it that it's no longer supported.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure what the implications are of that. Does that just mean it's now a doorstop?
No. What it means is any... Okay, so I have two Chromebooks, actually, and both of them are in the same state yours is. You can continue to use that Chromebook till the cows come home. What you won't get is any feature updates or any security updates. Now, how important are the security updates? Well, in general, I think they're fairly important. But on a Chromebook, since there are no viruses...
Yep.
To begin with, it's less of an issue than it is on any other sort of laptop or desktop or operating system. So I am lusting after several of the new Chromebooks. But as I was saying before the show, my phone died, so I had to buy a new phone. So right now, I'm not going to buy a new Chromebook, and I'm perfectly content to continue using my old Chromebook without an issue for the foreseeable future.
Because it protects itself against anything, you know, and anything new coming up, spyware, malware, that it's, you know, and it that tries to change anything in the operating system, that's the beauty of the Chromebook. It will still compare those changes to the original operating system and protect itself.
Right. Every time you boot the machine, if there are two copies of the operating system in memory, and it one of them is locked, and it connects, it contrasts the
protects
two,
it. Yep.
And if they are different, it downloads a third copy from Google and then compares that one, and if it's good, it boots with that one.
And it's still going to do that.
It's always going to do that.
Okay. What it's not going to do is if Google finds a bug in the software that causes a
right.
problem, that's
yeah.
not going to get fixed.
Right.
Okay. But in general, it's pretty safe to continue using it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of external threats, so far there are none
right.
against the Chromebook, so you're still good.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for all your help. Sorry I missed the great party the other week.
Well, you did, and we missed you too, but at least you're calling in now on your flip phone. Thanks, Ed.
Okay, thanks, guys.
I have to say, the one thing I miss about the flip phone, it wasn't as good as a regular wall phone where you could slam the receiver down
yeah.
in anger, but at least you could slam it closed.
It still
anger.
Didn't make the slamming noise at the other end.
No, it didn't
like
make the slamming
noise.
Like the
old wall phones did.
Right, right. But you could at least get a little bit of visceral feel out of that.
Yeah.
Now it's just pushing a button, a fake button, on the screen, and even with haptic feedback, it's not exciting. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, how you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Good. I have a question about what replaced the videotape. In other words, a long time ago when we had videotape, if I saw something interesting on television, let's say, I could throw a video cassette in, and let's say I wanted a friend to watch it, then I could record it on the video cassette and give it to a friend, and he could watch it. And, of course, these days I'm aware of copyright and digital rights management, so I'm talking about things where that doesn't apply. What would I use? Would it be better to record video these days on a DVD or a memory stick or to give to a friend, let's say? How would I do that?
Yeah, generally DVD recorders replaced VHS, but they're slower and not as easy to use. What I find most people do is you either take your smartphone out and shoot the TV with your video camera, or in many cases, especially like in news stories, that channel's website has the video file that you can play on the computer, and you send them the link.
Right, but if you want to record it yourself and it's over the air, you have limited choices.
Most HD home run.
Right. Most of the set-top boxes that you get from the various cable companies will not allow you to copy any data off. So what you need to do is buy a separate box that would allow you to do that. And as Steve said, the HD home run.
Which is a TV tuner that you connect to your computer. So that it can record shows for you. Basically, it's an over the air DVR. So you connect your antenna to it, and it can record shows into a digital file that you can then watch on your computers.
There is a program called Kodi that does much the same sort of thing, but it requires extra hardware and extra software, and usually that means an extra machine of some sort.
Okay, then let me ask you one more question. My cable box is actually a TiVo box with a cable card, so it acts like a cable box. It not only has an HDMI output, which normally goes to the television, but it also has two analog outputs. It has a component video output and a composite video output.
Right.
And since these are analog outputs, I was wondering if they would work in a more simple way, that I could maybe use those.
Yeah, we generally call that the analog hole.
Yeah.
So you can plug a VCR into that jack, if you can still find one, or you get a video capture card for your computer. What is it? The Elgato ITV, I think, was around a while. Hopage makes one. I'm putting a link up shortly. And you come out of that composite cable, and you plug it into the video capture on your computer. You hit play on the one device and record on the other device. It's all done in real time. Which is slow, but it does work, and it does bypass the proprietary format that the files are on. Some people have been able to root their TiVos and then get in and see the file formats, but it's tricky to do that, and tricky to read the format that it actually stores it under.
Right, and if I wanted to use those analog outputs that I just mentioned, instead of going into my computer, I think it would be simpler, although I don't know if this is possible, to go into a separate box that is just a DVR, not DVR, a DVD recorder,
right,
or a separate box that is just a memory stick recorder. That way I could get my computer out of it. I wouldn't have to worry about the software.
If you can still
be built into the dedicated box.
Right, if you can still find things like that.
Yeah, if you can find one of those, you're going to find, of course, that analog is not quite as clean a signal as HDMI, but it will certainly work. Why wouldn't HDMI work? Because at that point you're not.
Well, then you need an HDMI input box that supports the HDCP copy protection. Because HDMI is copy protected.
Oh, that's right, it is. Well, okay.
In many cases, yeah. So you could try that if you have an HDMI recorder. You can try it, but we've often found that those signals, it will tell you that you can't do this because of copy protection.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okey-doke.
It looks like there is a program called TiVo Desktop that will let you pull the recordings off your TiVo.
Well, that would be great. That's something I wanted. In an old version of the TiVo box, they actually had a built-in DVD recorder. As a matter of fact, I still have it sitting right here. But they've eliminated that, I think, because of a copyright protection.
Right.
They don't make those boxes anymore.
And it's hard to find blank discs anymore, and they're getting expensive. And it all had to be done in real time, which was a big problem. But that's how VCRs used to work anyway. You wanted a two-hour show, it took 2 hours to record it.
That's how your recorder works in your cable box.
Right.
Real time. I mean, get over it. Real time happens.
And then you can fast forward through the commercials.
Right.
There actually was a lawsuit with, was it Les Moonves?
Yeah.
tried to say that it was your legal obligation to watch the commercials, and so he tried to ban any devices that let you skip forward through the commercials.
Yeah, the problem is nobody, including the judge, likes commercials.
Yeah.
All right, but those are some solutions, and Steve will have something on the website in a couple minutes.
Okay, I'll let you go. But before I do, I just wanted to say there's something I wish you guys had that I don't think you have, and that would be a dedicated Soundbites app, something that I could bring up on my cell phone. I have an Android that would allow me to just go right to your archives, even if you had to charge a monthly price for it. It'd be worth it.
Well, you already have that. It's the Jazz 90.1 app.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
That has our archives on it, and then you can listen live over the air.
Or the website has our archives on it as well.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good one. Thanks for calling.
Have fun, Carl.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, there is a Jazz 90.1 app, and it has a whole bunch of wonderful stuff because, you know, jazz. It's one of the things that didn't come down when I redid my phone. Well, I'm going to have to add it then, aren't I? But the idea here is that it has all kinds of stuff, including our archives, and you can listen to all the wonderful shows on Jazz 90.1 Live, plus a whole bunch of other cool things. So if you're not using the app, you should download it. It is available for both the iPhone and the Android device. So I expect all of you will be our busily, those of you who don't already have it, are busily downloading it right now.
We got a few minutes before we got to take a break. And I just wanted to mention one thing.
Uh-oh.
One, I got to thank my friend Jim Stefano.
Guy. Jim is a great guy.
He's also into ham radio. And the reason I bring this up is because he helped me through
setting up a
Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
That I've been fighting with, and he was gracious enough to help me out and big time. But one of the things that I wanted to bring up, and you kind of wonder, well, computers and ham radio, what's that really got to do with it? Well, believe it or not, I learned this through some of the other folks in ham, that the Bahamas.
Yeah.
They literally got wiped out. All cell phone communications literally got wiped out.
Sure.
It was ham radio operators that were just literally taking the radio, hook it up to a car battery, threw a wire up in a tree or whatever they could get it up in there, and they were making contact back here in the States.
Yep.
And there was a number of individuals that were taking their information and emailing other family members to let them know that they were okay.
That's been true of every disaster in the last 100 years. The ham radio operators who keep things moving until emergency services get other forms of communication back up again.
Yeah, because, I mean, you just get out your phone. If you saw the, devastation, it was unbelievable. Yep. You know, we're so tied to our phones and computers and everything else. And all of a sudden, like I say, it's like somebody went through there and just scraped the land, just right across and destroyed,
and now
flattened everything.
There's another storm heading that way.
Yep.
They're not even recovered from the last one yet.
Yep. Where's the Sharpie say it's going? Never mind. Here's the... we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites hurtling headlong into our 31st year on the air with your enjoyment and hopefully enjoyment. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Mark from Greece, New York on the line. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hey, guys. One statement and one question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The statement was for the gentleman that called about recording, with a DVD recorder.
Sure, Carl. Yep.
If you look really well online, you can find DVD recorders that have component video in.
Mm-hmm.
And component video can be set to either interlaced or progressive, and you'll be surprised how much better component video looks in progressive state on a DVD than interlaced.
Yeah.
And component in general is much better than composite.
Exactly, because you're able to bring those things in in their true form and letting the device that's playing it back decode it back
right.
into its blended form. The other thing is that most DVDs are recorded in 480p, and when you play them on your TV, if you have a decent display, it's usually upconverted very well into a high def format. So
right.
he shouldn't have a problem if he really wants to look for something like that. There are DVD recorders with component video inputs.
Yep. Thank you. Good. Good point.
That's a good point.
Give them a little higher quality and give them a nice video.
And you may not find them in stores. You may have to go online.
Yeah. Right. They're getting harder to find in stores, but there's a plethora of them online.
Ooh, so. A plethora, no less.
A plethora, yes.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you. That's good. It's good information. Thank you. What's your question?
And the question is I've noticed the past couple weeks. When I boot up either my laptop or one of my desktop computers, when the system tray's loading, it's going berserk on all my computers. It's like
100% CPU?
Huh?
100% CPU usage?
No, it's just glitching. The CPU usage is fine, but it's like when it's trying to load the system tray, it's glitchy. All the time until it loads, and once it loads, it's fine.
What you're running Windows 10?
Windows 10. Latest updates on all of them.
I'm wondering if it's got something to do with your video. Is it what when you say it glitches?
If you point to something in the system tray or open the caret that's hiding. Things that are loading, they just like blink, on and off, and
oh yeah, okay, that's
yeah.
Well, I hate to say this, but that's kind of normal for Windows.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that until probably the last 3 weeks.
Well, they've had updates that you might want to check with your. A video manufacturer for new drivers, but it's unlikely that's the problem.
I did that. I did update all my drivers on both the computers, and
just don't reboot.
Well, you're right. but that's an issue that Microsoft has been having.
Yeah.
One of the problems is actually, and I think it was one of my stories, or did I do that for something else? When it does searching, oh look, I got an extra sheet of paper. That's very exciting. When it sets up Cortana and the search function,
last week's news.
Okay, it spikes the CPU usage to 100% for a while, and if it's doing that, you will find. Everything else is glitchy.
Yeah, no, it's just system tray. Everything else is smooth. And when I go into, say, while it's still booting up, I go into the task manager.
Yeah.
Like I said last week, Cortana right away is like disabled. It's got a little green leaf
icon
next to it. And so far, so good. It happens as soon as it boots because I've checked it. And it catches it immediately and just kind of disables it.
Right.
Yeah, which I think is great because if they're not going to fix it, at least it's not maxing out my CPU.
Right. Well, let me just say that you just need to be a little more patient.
I was just wondering if there was an issue, but I noticed it was happening on both my computers.
Yep.
So I did check drivers, and those were okay. But as long as it's not anything to worry about, that's all I was concerned is maybe there was something wrong, but...
No, I don't believe there's anything... You're using Windows 10 to begin with, so there's that. But, I mean, beyond that, there's nothing wrong.
I could be using Millennium.
Don't get Dave started. Do not get Dave started.
Haven't heard that version in a long time.
No ship.
Talk about a scary version of Windows.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever gotten more blue screens than I did on that.
Yeah, back
on that operating system.
Back in the day, when Dave didn't call it Windows Me, he called it something else Me.
Yeah, that was horrible. And unfortunately, that was my first computer, and it was purchased for me as a present.
Oh, yeah.
And
they really hated you, huh?
A frustrating learning experience.
Yeah, that's one way to think of it.
Yeah, that person didn't like you very much.
Well, it kind of made me actually more knowledgeable because I had to do a lot of research.
Yeah. Yes.
So in the end, it helped me be a more knowledgeable computer user and be able to troubleshoot.
So in the long run, you got the gift of education
through
and
Bill
skill.
Gates.
The gift of education through frustration.
Yeah, right.
There you go.
All right, thanks, Carl.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too, thanks. Yeah. Okay, now, this really should have been the first story, except a million Apple people would have cried out in agony. This really should have been the first story. In support of National Recovery Month, which this is, Google launched Recover Together, a set of resources for those struggling with opioid addiction. Using Google's locator feature, you can find nearby recovery support meetings or find a pharmacy where you can obtain naloxone, a drug that prevents overdose by opioids without prescription. On Recover Together, you'll also find other preventative resources, including a locator for safe disposal of unused medications. Your local pharmacy might also accept them, but Google's map provides those locations where it's likely guaranteed. If there aren't resources near you, Google also recommends connecting with others from your state in the Voices Project group on Facebook. According to CVS's website, some of their pharmacies can administer naloxone without a prescription in 48 states and D.C. So when all else fails, find your local pharmacy. And if you want to help someone else who's struggling, Google provides resources like what language to use when discussing addiction and organizations that provide housing or employment opportunities to those who need it, in case you want to share them with someone close to you. This is the internet and Google at their best. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, like I say, I'm learning so much about those Raspberry Pis and what they can do.
I love my Raspberry Pi. I've actually been learning Python programming because I have a Raspberry Pi.
Well, I'm thinking the 4, I hear, is even...
You got to be careful with the 4. It runs very hot.
Does it?
You have three, well, four choices. Nobody expects Spanish Inquisition. You can always just let it melt. But if with other than that, you have three choices, which is a big fan blowing on it with no case.
Mm-hmm.
A case with a gigantic fan.
I'll stick to the threes.
And
then
somebody else makes a case that is all metal, that the whole case is a heat sink.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to be careful what you put it on, but it keeps it fairly cool.
I'll stick with the threes then.
Stick with the threes.
I've got two of them right now.
There really comes a point at which you have to say you can't fit more power into this tiny little case without running into the laws of physics. Physics always wins.
And they are so simple to work with.
Oh, they're ridiculously simple.
And what you can do with them is, you know, it's just amazing. Like I say, what I've, through Jim there, teaching me some of the stuff and setting this up, it's like, wow. And then now it's gotten me into some of the other YouTube videos setting up other programs. So it's literally, you know, in a hard drive that's literally in another computer on just this little box.
Well, that's another thing that that I was going to mention to Carl about how to replace a video tape recorder. A Raspberry Pi will do that fairly well, depending on what you have. There's a program called Mini DVB Linux, and which can be used as a video recorder. It has HDMI in.
Yeah, you can hook it up to the TV.
It's got depending on the model you buy, it's either got USB 1 or 3, and that means you could hook a 2 terabyte external.
Yeah.
And it's got the drive to it,
and it's got the threes have all the wired or wireless.
Right.
Oh, we're hearing some.
Oh, that's me.
Audio playing somewhere.
But
that was me. Sorry, no, I actually.
I still hear it.
No, wait a minute.
Oh, I do still hear it. It's Dave.
It's one of those 27 screens. It's a screen that Rob left open.
Yeah.
It's a screen. Well, they got so many other screens open there and stuff.
Yeah.
But,
So you can use, there are programs like OpenELEC and Kodi and MiniDB, DVB Linux, which can let you use the Pi as a video recorder. So you do the output from input from your cable or output from your television or however you want to do it, and then record it directly on this thing.
Well, what I saw was cool, you know, because they're trying to hook you're trying to hook other devices up to like a hard drive and that, and you don't want it moving around. What I'm seeing is a lot of folks are getting like Tupperware boxes.
Yeah.
And cutting slots in it. And then they go ahead and mount, say, the hard drive in there and put it up on pegs and then mount the Raspberry Pi in there along with a little muffin fan.
Yep.
And they'll put muffin fans in there so that it's blowing the cool air through there, keeping everything cool.
Do you know the muffin fan?
Do you know the muffin fan, the muffin fan, the muffin fan?
But other folks are building little boxes and everything else and turning, you know, hooking up TVs to them and the keyboards and the mouse and running it as a full computer.
And you can run on the Raspberry Pi 3. You can run Windows 10. I wouldn't certainly recommend it, but you can run pretty much any flavor of Linux, although they have Raspbian, which is a Linux. It's a quad-core 64-bit processor running at 1.4 gigahertz, a gigabyte of RAM. It's got wireless, Bluetooth, high-speed internet. It's only the Model 3B Plus is only up to 300 megabits per second, but it does power over Ethernet if you want that. And that's very cool. The Raspberry Pi 4 is gigabit Ethernet and stuff like that. But
I'm thinking of trying that, and that's going to be my introduction to Linux. Because I've been wanting.
How are you not using Linux yet? What is wrong with you? Even he's using Linux. He doesn't know it, but he is.
I'm using Unix. Darn it.
That's right. You're using Mach. Well, it's
Mach
based
with
on,
BSD.
Yeah.
Well, like I say. I got into it quite a bit doing this project and setting this node up and that. And for the folks that don't know what I'm talking about, is basically I just set up this little device so that it's through the internet, other ham radio operators can literally connect all around the world. All we got to do is put in your node number and I can connect over to Japan, which I've already done, down to, say, Africa, anywhere where there's a node up and running. And it was through the Jim there helped me with the Linux, Unix, getting the commands. That's what I've never done. That took me back to the old DOS days,
sure.
Which I really enjoy.
Right. Yeah. Don't even go there.
I mean, he just
showed. Minus RF.
Yeah.
The F forces it to happen whether you want it or not.
Yeah.
But just to learn all these different, commands and all that stuff, it's like, wait, this is like my old DOS days, Edlin and handling stuff like that and going through and, you got to do this. And I loved it that you could sit there and type a command, then type part of it, hit the tab key, and it finishes it.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like, whoa, that's way cool.
You can also, on the command line, if you hit the up arrow, it brings up the last command.
That's sort of like the old, DOS.
That's where DOS stole it from.
DOS stole it from. It's exactly right.
Yeah, you can hit the up and down arrow once you get up into a few of them and bring it back. Oh, whoa.
But you think about the amount of power they're able to cram into a smartphone for $1,000. But, but having this thing for $35 fit in the palm of your hand, the connectors for your Ethernet and your USB are the biggest things on it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The other thing is for, I think it was $19, you can buy a 7-inch screen to put on it. So if you don't want to hook it to your TV, my TV is already full. All the HDMI outputs are full. Inputs are full, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you could spend a few bucks. Put a little thing on this, stick that on a 7-inch or a 9-inch screen, and stay on top of your Tupperware box, and bang, you got a whole thing right there for yourself. And of course, you can now then also take that video and move it to a bigger screen or whatever you want to do to it. But it's a pretty amazing little product.
For a little darn device.
Well, and it's teeny, and it's cheap. The board itself is $35. You got to spend another, what is it, $10 for the power supply. So,
well, you can get the
for
whole...
less than $50.
Well, the new ones have a USB power connector, USB-C power connector on it that you may already have on your phone.
You may already have for your phone. That's exactly right.
See, I got the whole kit, which was the board. It came with the little heat sinks, the memory chip.
Yep.
And I think that was a 4 gig memory stick for it. Right. The case. And then what I liked about it was I got the power supply. Instead of just plugging it in and it's always on, it has a little toggle switch so you can turn it on and off. And I think all of that together was $80.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and it really is a full computer.
And that it also included a little remote keypad.
Yeah.
Keyboard.
Yep.
And it's like, you can't get a whole computer for under $100.
That's exactly right. And this is a full-blown, real computer.
Yeah.
It's about as powerful as a low-end laptop.
Yeah.
And if you think to yourself, okay, I could spend $300 or $400 on a laptop,
mm-hmm.
or I could spend $80 on this, you know? And it, again, if you're not carrying it around, why are you spending the extra money for a laptop? I've never understood that in my entire life.
Well, that's what's driving me right now. I've got one computer set up there, but I've got my wife's other laptop driving on this other radio. But it's old, and like I had to hook up a regular mouse to it because the mousing on the keyboard doesn't work that well.
Right.
But I thought, little Raspberry Pi'd take up less space. Hook it up to the monitor.
You're done.
Be golden.
I'm currently using one for a lot of monitoring stuff that I do. I haven't. That's one of the reasons I've been learning Python. But monitoring all the websites that I'm involved in, making sure they're up and running like that. What I haven't done yet, and that's maybe this week, maybe next week, is to have it then text me if something goes down.
Oh yeah,
I can do. I'm doing that now from another website. But if that website goes down, then nothing is getting to me. So if I do it from two places, I'm that belt and suspenders guy because I spent so many years as a systems administrator.
Well, that's one thing I noticed with this one particular program that I'm using. You know, I putty in and I can go to the file, and there's so much stuff that's built in there that I can uncomment it. And like you say, it can let me know if there's a weather coming through that I should be aware of and everything else, a thunderstorm or other things that are already there, and all you got to do is uncomment, and through your soundboard, it'll come through.
Yep. I can find all those programs for the Raspberry Pi as well. I want to write them myself because I want to learn Python.
But, yeah.
And you don't have to use Python. You can use any language. Python happens to be already built in. I might as well use it and see what
happens. And we got some sort of bad news in the Apple world that the next macOS Catalina, they're going to be deprecating the original Unix scripting languages like Python and Ruby and Perl. Part of the problem was that they never kept them up to date anyway. So if you're going to run Python, you're going to go to the Python project and download it yourself.
Right.
Which you can still do. So the people that want to do that will still do that. They're just not including
old
versions by
default.
The
reality is that most Mac users are not actually programmers.
Yeah.
The vast majority.
No, they just want to click on folders and go.
The less than 1% who are going to get all up in arms.
They don't go under the hood.
They're also apparently abandoning Bash and going to Z.
Yeah, okay.
Why?
Because
change
it's different.
For change's sake is just it's ridiculous.
Bash is so much easier.
They don't want to be common.
Yeah, but Bash is everything right
there. Bash is right there. Everybody knows it. It's just ridiculous to not do it. But that's Apple.
We've been using Bash since 1989.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's one thing I like is with the putty. I just SSH in on in, and then go to the Bash, and I can in there get to all the files that I need to edit. And
well, and the other thing is Bash, as Steve said, runs on everything, so people know it already.
Yeah, it's sort of like the old. It's like DOS. Yeah. It's like DOS, and it's got all those features built in. Like you said, it stole it that I can hit the up and down arrow keys or tab over Nano, and then start typing something. Bam.
I can do all kinds of, there's just an amazing number of things you can do from the command line. So I can SSH into my Raspberry Pi and do anything I want to do.
Yeah.
Although I have hooked it up to a television and a monitor, and I actually used it to do LibreOffice.
Oh, really?
And it works. It's not incredibly fast, but it works. And then I did Google Docs. And, of course, that's just as fast as everywhere else because it's actually happening up in the...
Yeah, it's up on the internet.
And it's kind of amazing that this tiny little $50 box, you're right, $80 if you buy the case.
Yeah, that's...
You want the heat sinks. But let's call it an $80 box. Can do everything the average person needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Yeah. Just got to take the time to learn it, and and that's still no excuse because there are so many YouTube videos,
right,
on particular things that you can put in Raspberry Pi and whatever you want to do with it.
And I suspect that if you were to go to the Rochester, the Linux group that meets on Saturdays, that they would be happy to welcome a Raspberry Pi person.
Well, there's more and more groups and interest groups that are finding uses for the Raspberry Pi. And I would think even, Steve, with your model airplane stuff,
yeah,
you know, using that to do the telemetry and everything else, you know, it's an easy thing to carry around and or build and use.
Apparently, there is a Rochester, New York group, or at least there was years ago. Well, Rochester Makerspace, of course. Duh. Oh, their site is offline. Maybe there isn't Rochester Makerspace anymore.
They were in the Hungerford building, weren't they?
I don't get out much anymore. Interlock maybe has does something with that. I don't know. I'll look it up a little bit. All right. That music tells me that we are done with the first hour. We've got another hour coming up, so don't go away. We'll be back in just a little bit with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And take a little bio break. I'm going to. And then we'll be back with a whole lot more, a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites hurtling headlong into our 31st year on the air, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member supported. The award winning Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just two shakes of that little lamb's tail.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Talking about all this sort of takes me back to the days when
To tell people where we are, we were geeking out over Raspberry Pis.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi and what they call Bash.
The Bash shell, the born-again shell.
The born-again shell. And for you old-timers that have been around with us for a long time, and you remember the old days of doing stuff, not the screens that we've got nowadays. Well, they were a monitor, But when you turned it on, all you saw was a cursor. And you literally...
Did you use the underline cursor or the full black cursor?
Or did you use the custom cursor where you could have it be any character?
Yeah, it's what you're... But we've been geeking out about the... Again, because we've been here 30 years, folks, going back to the old DOS days, when you could do DOS commands at Edlin and all those, it just sort of brings back a lot of memories that, you know, us doing this, like I said, for 30-plus years now, we have forgotten about. And getting into a system...
You've forgotten. I've been using Linux for 30 years, so I'm still on the command line.
But, yeah. But I'm saying for a lot of us, though, we've gotten so used to and indoctrinated in Windows.
We used to compute uphill both ways in the snow.
Yep.
And that's how I met your mother.
She was in a snowdrift. I pulled her out. But yeah, going back to it's just such fun. Because back then it was just as much fun with the little power that we had compared to today's times.
Right.
I mean, what we worked with then is, I mean, you can buy greeting cards now that open up and, you know, they start singing and everything else. That's got more technology in it than the original PCs when the 8088s came out.
You have more power in your watch than we used to go to the moon.
Yeah.
That's absolutely true. So Z Shell, by the way, is a enhanced bash. So it's not like you're missing anything really.
Well, you can also, for folks that don't want to get into that part, they can also get into, WinSCP?
Yes.
WinSCP will also, get into, and it's like an editor if you got to have the GUI.
Right.
And versus using SSHing on into it and using the bash.
Right. When SCP does FTP and SFTP and WebDAV and Amazon 3, and it's an SCP client for Windows. So, there's a whole bunch of stuff that it does. It harkens back. Let's just say.
That's why I say the past 3 weeks I have learned more about this.
Yeah.
And it's so much fun. It reminds me, like I say, back in the old days when I was learning programming and everything else that we used to have so much fun with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
And it's why we got into doing what we do.
And it's very cool. It continues. It brings you back to the fun days.
Yep.
All right, so last month, and last week rather, we saw Microsoft slowly admitting there were search bugs in the second monthly cumulative update for Windows 10 version 1903. And although this month's first 1903 cumulative update, KB4515384, was supposed to fix the bugs, we now have official acknowledgement that the bugs are back. That's right, since Tuesday, albeit in a different form. Remember last month?
So that makes some new bugs.
And some new bugs, yes. Old bugs in new bottles. Remember last month when Microsoft kind of sort of announced there was a Cortana Search UI redline bug in its second August cumulative update? Although complaints about the bug poured in within hours of the release, it took Microsoft days to fess up with the first notification in a tweet. Several more days would pass before we had any details. Well, on September 11th, 2 days after the September 2019 cumulative update appeared, Microsoft has acknowledged a similar bug with a slightly different profile. Basically, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we got a guy waiting on a car phone. It's the same thing. High CPU usage for Search UI, particularly under Cortana, and the issue only occurs on devices that have disabled searching the web using Windows Desktop Search. If you turn that on, you get a slightly less high CPU usage, not low, just slightly higher. There's reports related to the start menu in Windows Desktop Search. It affects Windows 10 version 1903. Microsoft says they're investigating. However, as of last night, the Knowledge Base article stood said Microsoft is not currently aware of any issues with this update. So take that with however many grains of salt you want. But we should go to the phones because we've got a person waiting in the car. Our next caller is Jerry, waiting in a car. Hi, Jerry.
Hey,
what's up?
Yeah, I have a question about some really old hardware. I think I've got up in the attic one of those Sinclair ZX80s.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And if I remember right, it only has a television output, NTSC.
Right.
Well, NTSC display devices are getting real hard to find. So do you guys know of any way to convert an NTSC output device or something that used to go to a TV set to something that's even like primitive 640 by 480 VGA or, you know, never mind HDMI, but, you know, a more modern flat screen monitor?
Well, I don't have a direct link for you because I don't remember. But I do know that a short while ago, I actually looked up those old connectors for a video video to
is
a
it
television.
Is it the F connector? Does it have?
I don't remember. It looked like, I think I remember it looked like one of the old RCA type connectors.
Mm.
You know, the coax, the early.
It needed that RF thing. Connector. Remember those from the old Apple II days?
Yeah, the little screw-on thing.
Yeah.
Virtually every TV still has those built in.
Right.
That's where you plug your analog cable into also. Virtually every TV still has an ATS, it has the NTSC tuner in it, but they all have the ATSC new digital standard,
too. Well, I think the problem he's missing is the device that connects you to that.
Oh, the RF adapter.
The little RF adapter.
Ah.
And that is a thing. So what you need is the thing that plugs into the ZX80 and then also connects to the antenna leads on the back of the television, yeah?
Well, my television doesn't have antenna leads.
Well, that's an issue.
Does it have the little screw-on RF connector?
I'd have to go back and look and blow the cobwebs away or something like that. But you kind of have to go back in history to find something that's flat screen that has that kind of input still.
My TV still does.
Or a component or something like that.
Well, one way or the other, once you know what type of connector you need, I guarantee you can find it on Amazon or... at the worst, eBay, but likely on Amazon, even if it's RF to component output or RF to whatever. But the reality is that those things do still exist. You just have to know what's on each end, and then you can buy the connector for the middle. They're still out there.
Yeah, maybe that would be one of those hints you might want to put on your website or something like that, you know, for all those owners of those lonely Radio Shack color computers or something like that.
Yeah. I've got a Jupiter Ace sitting around. It was a Sinclair. It was a ZX80, but it instead of using BASIC, it used Forth. So it was a much better computer. But otherwise, it was, in fact, Jupiter, it essentially, again, old wine and new bottles. It was the same, or new wine and old bottles. It was the same case. It just had a slightly different ROM chip in it.
Yeah, so the key to solving my problem is to find an RF to component converter or something like that.
Well, step one is to figure out what connectors you have in the back of your television.
Okay.
Step two is what connectors you have in the back of the ZX80. And step three is to find the bridge device that goes between those two.
All right, so it sounds like I have some hunting to do. All right.
A little bit of hunting, but you should be able to find it without any serious... issue, just a little bit of time and detective work.
Alrighty. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, good luck.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that's another one of those things. The Timex Sinclair was a very cool little product. The Sinclair ZX80, the Jupiter Ace, all of those were very cool. And if you wanted to learn BASIC, you know, this is the thing that we don't really have anymore. You know, that sort of easy programming language for beginners. Mm-hmm. Every computer used to come with it.
Turbo Pascal.
Not an easy language. Let's start with the easy language of BASIC, right?
BASIC, yeah.
It got a lot of people involved in programming to start with. You can download versions of Pascal and Python and Perl and C and Fortran and everything else. For pretty much every, including your Raspberry Pi. Yep. You can even get BASIC. There's at least two versions that I know of, Tiny BASIC and MM BASIC, for the Raspberry Pi. So if you really want to continue to learn BASIC, you can do that. But it's been superseded by things like Python and Perl and for system work and things like that. So, you know, I do a lot of stuff in PHP. If you're programming on the web, that's pretty much universal, although it may not. I know. Oh, it's not the best and fastest.
Yeah. Build a bridge. Get over it.
Exactly. But Python, again, an interpreted language, but it's still fast enough for what most people are doing. So there's all kinds of cool things you can do if you know a language. And I found that I needed to learn these languages because there were things I wanted to do that I couldn't find the exact program to do them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I had to scratch my own itch.
Most people would go to close enough.
Yeah, no.
But you know, true geeks would write their own.
That's exactly right.
Well, like I say, though, but to, you know, be as we've stated before, you know, you can go to a lot of the stores right now, and you're not seeing the big boxes there anymore. Most of the stores now carry laptops, tablets, and phones.
Right.
The big boxes are disappearing. So, you know, well, like you said,
a lot of times now they're micro boxes. You know, it's below a mini computer, and it just hangs on the back of the LCD monitor, and that's your computer.
That's right.
Yeah. Whereas if you want to play around, and you know, like you said, and this is something I think is going to be down the road, where you know somebody's going to come up with it with the Raspberry Pi to be able to set that up, hook it up to a hard drive. You can hook it up to TVs right now. You can get a, you know, 34-inch TV for under $100.
Yep.
Hook it, the TV, you know, on the Raspberry Pi up to the TV, hook it up to a hard drive, and do backups of all your photos and everything else that you'd be able to, because it has the USB ports on it, hook a you know, another device up to it and upload all the photos and everything else to a hard drive right there.
Well, you can buy a 1 terabyte micro SD card.
Yeah,
if you really want to, and if you take a look at places like it's $100, but I mean it's terabyte for $100. Oh, wow. But one of the things that I've seen at RIT a lot, and I'm sure every school is doing this, and a lot of other places as well, they are doing exactly that. They hang a Raspberry Pi off the back of a device,
and
use it as an announcement thing. And then if you need to change it, they're either all just running a kiosk version browser to somewhere that they can change, you know, a server that somewhere, or they all do it individually. And so you can SSH in and make your changes.
I just saw this one special here. You said, look, you know, we were going to look at different kits. They got a whole kit here right now. I just did a quick Google search. They got the Raspberry Pi 3 plus a 3.5-inch touchscreen, plus 9-layer acrylic case, 2.5-watt power supply, plus heat sinks. Now, you get all that?
Yeah.
$68.
Yeah. I don't know how you beat that anymore.
I mean, they show it. And there's, you got your little screen. It's got the power supply that I like with the switcher.
And the screen will sit right on top of the case.
No, it is in the case.
That's what I'm saying. It's right in the case.
Yeah, you just turn the thing upside on the side and...
And there you go.
Yeah, you're up.
And depending on what you're using it for, like I said, I use mine for monitoring.
Yeah.
Well, I don't need a big screen to monitor stuff.
Yeah.
A little screen is more than adequate to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I can then hang it somewhere and just watch it.
Yeah, you program it to flash red saying, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap.
Yeah. Oh, let me write that down. I will do that tonight.
No, you can just have it play sound effects. You know,
yes, you can.
Yeah. Hook it up to a sound fob.
Well, what's interesting with the Raspberry Pi is you can hook soundboards to it. You can hook cameras to it. They make a little camera for a few bucks.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly adequate. I know a number of people who use it as their watch who comes up on my porch camera.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, you know.
Surveillance type of camera.
Yeah, yeah. And so those are the kinds of little projects that, in this case, you know, like I said, $50, if you don't want to spend for a case and everything else, for $50, you get all of those pieces and parts. You can make little devices that do everything. I know a friend who uses one to watch her dog.
during the day. And she's got a speaker on it, so she can talk to her dog during the day. So it's the kind of thing that that, you know, for a few bucks and a little bit of your time, either finding the right program or writing the right program, you can have a whole lot of fun.
Well, that's the thing. And because the way computers are changing so much, I know for a lot of folks, you know, they're probably tuning this out because, that's too technical. Well, you know what? This is the way that it's going to go. Look at our worlds now. I mean, everybody's carrying around a mini computer right now in your back pocket or your purse that's got a lot of power to it.
And a surveillance and tracking and GPS.
It's already in there, folks. You're part of it, whether you realize it or not. And some of the stuff that you can do with that phone, you know, moving photos from, you know, your phone up to the internet to save them. That's still, you know, computing power.
That's right.
You're just looking at it a different way. It's, you know, they've made it so simplistic. And we're more or less talking about stuff behind the scenes that for the folks back, you know, like we said, the old DOS days that were geeks. And that's what the way they refer to it, is computer geeks,
right,
like to play around with stuff and figure out how it works and try to find different ways to make it work. That was the fun when we first started out in PCs of doing. That was the challenge.
Yep.
How can I break this, or how can I make it do this, or how to do that?
Instead of sitting around and watching YouTube.
Now they sit there and they play the Facebook games, you know, and the fighting and everything else. It really doesn't stretch the mind as much as, you know, trying to create a program to do this or do that.
How do we get some of that YouTube money?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, really.
You need 1 million subscribers is how you start getting that YouTube money. So everybody sign up 3 times.
We have 183.
Yep. Just for GeeWiz, it's a no-name company, but Amazon has 2 terabyte micro SD cards, class 10, so they're the fast ones, for $80. $80.
Yep.
Just amazing. And so there's you know, that stuff is out there, and it's anything you would need to make your Raspberry Pi into a full blown computer.
I've got a picture of the first IBM 5 megabyte hard drive was the size of a small car.
Yeah, I have a picture of it being loaded into an airplane.
Yeah, I think and now 2 terabytes about the size of your thumbnail.
Yeah, yeah, it's just amazing. And you can build a full-blown computer to do whatever you need to do. You know, my wife was joking yesterday. She said that we were all lucky that 3D printers didn't come down in price until after my father-in-law passed. But he would have been very much the Raspberry Pi 3D printer guy. You know, he kept his brain active right up to the end, and God bless him for that.
Before that, it was all you know, car tinkering, where you could take your components out of your car and tinker with it and put it back in and make it better and better carburetor.
Rebuild it,
right. Well, that was him too. When I bought my first Volkswagen Beetle, he presented me with a metric wrench set. I'm next.
Did he make you pull the engine out and put it back in on a weekend?
With one hand.
Yeah.
It was a Beetle.
I did do that one time.
Yeah.
Because
I bet you're not going to be there to get
the fan housing. Somebody had backed into my Beetle, and the fan housing, which is on the backside, tried to get to it because it was hitting. So I had to drop the engine, and we had to re-pull reshape the hood.
Right.
And then pull the fan housing away from the blades.
Right. Yeah, I've always said the big difference between me doing my car and the garage doing my car, they've got all the right tools.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that I can't do that stuff. I just have to buy $400 worth of tools to do it, or they can do it for $200.
And,
you know, which is going to be better for me.
Oh, matter of fact, I was just talking to somebody about an old Beetle. The one thing that I remember is I had a 64 Volkswagen, and going through the first winter,
yeah,
what you had to do, and I was told this right away, was as soon as it started getting cold, crawl underneath the back part, with some baling wire and wire the heat exchanges open.
Right.
Because the wire that you, the little knob up front to turn it to open up the heat vents, usually rusted out and snapped. And if you didn't want to have to rerun the wires, you'd get underneath the bug and just wire both of those baffles open so you had heat all the time during the winter months.
I did that. Also, the one thing I really loved about my Beetle, mm-hmm. I could scrape the front and the back windows from the driver's seat. It's true. I had a slightly long-handled brush, but yep. I could do it.
I remember...
the insides.
Had the Beetle, and I was going to RIT. This is when they just started to open up the campus where you taught. And yep. I got up, and it's snowing like crazy. And my little bug gets all the way up there, and I'm barreling through the snow and all that because I had snow tires on it. And I see the professor coming out. He goes, "Class is canceled. How'd you make it here?" I go, "No problem." He goes, it's canceled. So I just downshifted, spun that thing around, and I remember blasting through that parking lot. It was so much fun.
I was visiting a friend of mine one time, and when I left, there had been an ice storm while I was at his house. People off the side of the road, Cadillacs and everything, all off the side of the road, crunched into the cars on the side and everything else. I'm in my little Beetle with fairly decent tires,
yeah.
But it was rear-wheel drive, and I'm not an idiot, so I was driving slow. I'm just tooling along, and, you know, it's that lawnmower sound, ring, 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 as you're driving along.
Yeah.
And I had no problems. There's people swearing at me and making rude Italian street gestures as I'm going by, and I'm just waving like the queen, waving like the queen.
Yeah, that was so much fun to drive. I miss that so much.
It was always the people that lived the farthest away made it to work on time. The people that lived across the street couldn't be bothered.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites, and it's right here on the Truly Great and Truly Grateful to You That We Are Member-Supported, award-winning Jazz 90.1. See you in just a couple of minutes.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, well, we are sound bites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And now for my favorite news story of the week. As Apple debuted its newest iPhones on Tuesday, a striking new feature took center stage. A three-lens setup that puts a near-professional camera in the hands of anyone who can afford the $1,000 to $1,100 devices. Three lenses are a lot better than two, unless they send you reeling in disgust. That's the unexpected reaction thousands of Apple fans shared on social media as images spread of the back of the new phone, where the trio of lenses are crowded into a small square near the top left corner. The backlash comes from people who say they suffer from an obscure and perplexing addition called tripophobia, a fear of clusters of small holes, like those found in shoe treads, honeycombs, and lotus seed pods. Essex University professor Jeff Cole, a self-diagnosed tripophobe and researcher in the United Kingdom who studies the condition, calls it the most common phobia you have never heard of.
The phobia isn't recognized in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which psychologists and psychiatrists use to diagnose patients, but self-described sufferers and some researchers claim the images can evoke a strong emotional response and induce itching, goosebumps, and even nausea and vomiting. Trypophobia was only named in 2005. Over the next decade, though, thousands of people have reported suffering from trypophobia. Support groups have popped up on social media. But why would these images of harmless stuff possibly bother people? Some scientists are trying to figure out why people cringe at close-up photos of objects as innocuous as a frothy latte. They have found that even those who don't feel repulsed by some such images often feel uncomfortable looking at a bunch of small holes clustered together. Just as stripes can cause headaches and flashing lights can induce seizures, clusters of holes might have a physiological effect on the brain. Researcher Arnold Wilkins, a professor emeritus at the University of Essex, theorized that mathematical principles hidden in the patterns require the brain to use more oxygen and energy, which can be distressing. Other research suggests the discomfort might come from an innate drive to avoid infectious diseases and contaminated food. Some have also hypothesized the fear could stem from an evolutionary response to dangerous animals, like poisonous frogs and insects, which often display patterns similar to those seen in trypophobic photos. Does the new camera set up on the iPhone creep you out? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 and toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Twitter exploded with memes.
Twitter exploded with memes, but I will say I have two reactions to it. One is you look at that cluster of holes and you don't know what's coming out of it.
Yeah.
That goes back to...
Heaven forbid it's Willy Wonka.
Things in my youth.
The Johnny Depp Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka will always Wonka.
Gene Wilder, yeah.
Absolutely right. But the other thing is, honestly, and this is going to creep people out too, the back of the iPhone looks to me like spider eyes.
Yes. Especially that big hairy killer, was it wolf spider?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one of those memes in there, too.
Yeah, I'm sure that's in there as well.
iPhone 15, all cameras.
All cameras. But, yeah, people are actually...
Yep, there's the spider.
Yep. People are actually creeped out by... That's what I see, spider eyes, when I look at it. People are creeped out by multiple holes.
I like the fidget spinner.
Oh, well, see, it does kind of look like a fidget spinner. Now, that's a good image. I mean, comparatively, I think fidget spinners are... Okay, but it's a better image than spider eyes, I guess. But yeah, I'm not going to buy an iPhone anyway. Certainly not an $1,100 phone.
Just make sure you don't get the Peter tingle. You haven't seen the new Spider-Man movie yet, have you?
Oh, I have seen the Spider-Man movie.
the Peter tingle.
Yes, the Peter tingle. That's right. There's a whole group of people who find the new... back of the new iPhone to be unsettling, from minor unsettlement to major nausea and fear and shaking and everything else.
Well, how many cameras does your phone have?
Mine has two, one in the back and one in the front.
Only one on the back?
I only need one because it's an amazing phone.
That's the XL, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the, you weren't here for all of this. My old phone, lovely Pixel 1, which I absolutely love, my Pixel 1 XL, died. I said this, 30% battery, then 40% battery, then 50% battery. So I went and got the Pixel 3A XL for $480 list price.
Mm-hmm.
It does everything I needed to do. It has amazing night sight. So indoor pictures are great. It does portrait photos. Super easily and nicely. It's got a 3,700 milliamp hour battery, so it takes like forever. It lasts rather forever. It's a pretty amazing device, and I'm very impressed with it all the way around. And
looks like the Pixel 4 XL is going to have three cameras.
Yeah, but they're on a black background, so you don't see them.
Yeah.
Quite the same way. But this is the photo I took of a friend of mine, and you can see it does the portrait thing, or you can turn that off if you want and see everything.
Yeah.
But the other thing to notice is
that's a super bright background, and yet his face is...
There's been some interesting discussions in the legitimacy of photos. That, you know, photographic evidence used to be a big thing.
Right.
And you needed a dark room and experts to change a photo.
Right.
Now, you don't even take a real photo on your phone.
Right.
The camera and software on your phone does so much processing before you see the photo that it's not a real photo. The HDR was one of the first big ones, the high dynamic range. So if you have a dark subject in front of a bright background, it's usually washed out by the bright background.
Right.
So you have to close your aperture to cut down the bright background, but then you can't see the front subject.
Right.
So it takes a picture with the aperture closed to get the front and the aperture open to get the back.
And then mixes them.
And mixes them together and shows you the picture. So we haven't had real pictures in years.
Right. I had a guy ask me could I fax him a document?
Yeah.
And I thought, could I Pony Express it to you? Of course, faxes are newer than Pony Express.
Yeah.
By 5 years.
Not by much, yeah.
By 4 years.
Yeah.
Pony Express was 1860 to 1861. Yes, less than a year is the only time the Pony Express actually ran. And believe it or not, the fax machine was invented in 1865. That blows my mind.
Yep.
But
there were similar concepts hundreds of years before with signal flags on mountains. Yeah.
But... the reason it, and I do understand this, the reason I had to send him a fax is because their company legally thinks of a fax as an acceptable legal document and nothing else.
Real estate until and
they,
legal.
Right. Yeah. So until they update their laws, their rules, I have to fax them. Luckily,
so I can physically sign it, scan it, and send it to you, and that doesn't work.
Right. But it has to be faxed. Right.
So now I have an email to fax service, so I physically scan it.
Yes.
Sign, and then send it as an email, and the other end sends
faxes
it as a fax.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I did. Now there's another, Rackspace sent me a PDF, which I just had to sign and send back. That was easy. That was 8 seconds to do that. That was fine. But this company that wanted faxing, I haven't faxed anything in...
We had a customer.
I just threw out my old fax machine.
Yeah.
We had a customer get tricked by one of those fake tech support places. And when he called the credit card company to dispute the charge, they sent the credit card company a copy of the signed service contract that he agreed to pay. And they used brush script font to sign the contract in his name.
It gets nuts at some point. The fact is that we're in a new era and we have to pay some serious attention to how we're going to handle signed documents and legally acceptable things, whether it's a document or a photo or whatever it is. For example, I record a lot of the calls that I get. Are those legally acceptable?
I think New York is a one-party state.
Yes, New York is a one-party state. So as long as one of the two parties knows it's being recorded, it's legal.
And that's
not the point. Right, that's me, so I ought to know whether or not I recorded it.
Yeah.
So that's legal, but will it be accepted in court
as
an unimpeachable source?
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to edit.
Right. We're going into the whole chain of custody again issue now that, did you take it? Yes. Was it ever out of your possession? Yes. Well, now it's suspect.
Right. Was it out of your possession? No. Well, you uploaded it to the web. Yeah. It was out of your possession.
Yep.
Okay, I guess. That's how that works.
Then you got to have experts claiming it's real, and the other side will have experts claiming it's been doctored, just enough to raise reasonable doubt.
That's all they have to do.
Yep.
So we're entering a new era, and we aren't there. We don't know what we're doing with it yet, but it's out there. It's a whole new world. Here's a 3D printed hanger for a Raspberry to put on the back of your monitor. So probably 20 cents worth of filament, and you're couple hours and letting it sit on that thing?
I was telling Dave during the break that my Raspberry Pi is sitting next to my 3D printer in my pile of things to get to.
Yeah. Well, I owe him some stuff, and I'll get to it. But my daughter this week called me and said, "Dad, can you 3D print some stuff for me?" The correct answer is, "Of course I will, honey." So I've been doing that all week. That's
far more important.
That is far more important, and I will be the first to admit that. So yeah, but I do love 3D printing. It is fun. It is fun. Okay, I get it. You take cookies. Thanks. It is fun, and Raspberry Pis are fun. And now that I'm retired, I can have all the fun I want.
Yeah.
All the fun your wife lets you.
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes.
That, too.
All the fun she wants.
Yeah.
Right. The one thing I do need, though, is I realize that all of my old monitors do not, none of my new old monitors have HDMI.
Mm-hmm.
So now I have to actually spend money for an HDMI monitor if I want to hang the Raspberry Pi off.
Get an HDMI to VGA adapter.
Then just get a a small TV.
Well, but that's no. I'm going to get one of these 7 or 9 inch monitors, and that way I can hang it where I can see it all the time for my monitoring software.
Yeah, but what I'm thinking though is you can sit there with the TV screen. You could have that in one corner.
Picture in picture. See, picture in picture as a feature almost doesn't exist anymore because it's easier to get a second monitor.
Right.
Or third or fourth.
In fact, I had the...
In fact, that screen there, were there 9 inputs on that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you could have other, you know, if you wanted to watch an old movie or something else or listen to other stuff, you could have this all going on one screen.
I had a
monitor
switcher.
Multiple systems.
Right. I had a switcher. Because I don't have enough inputs in my TV.
Mm-hmm.
I had a switcher that I got from you.
Mm-hmm.
It died, so I have to buy a new one if I'm going to do that. But I could put 5 or 6 Raspberry Pis on it. But the problem is I want that monitor to be always visible.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
so
they have that one model.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I can get a 7 or 9 inch for $70.
It mounts right on the case.
Right.
Just hang that, and you can sit there and watch what's going on.
That's exactly my point. That's what I plan to do. And I can monitor everything that I need to monitor without an issue. And I can one of the things I've got is a TV camera out my front door. Like I said.
All right, we got a couple. Questions here. Okay. It says, "Hey guys, I typed the address for the ad about ham radio you ran during the break in search Chrome and got porn? Chinese, I think."
Hell
radio.
Wrong.
No, it's hamradio.org. What you see, got thanks.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, it's hamradio.org, right?
Yep. So, yeah, it said, we'll check that out. And
except
let's see.
That certificate is expired.
So yeah, the certificate
is
expired.
We didn't listen to the sponsor. Sorry about that.
Yeah, we definitely have a business to conduct.
Soundbites. Saying bash is like disc is like saying a roll of rolls is like a pinto.
No, it is not.
Saying bash is like dis.
He meant
is
DOS.
Like saying, yeah, I think that's what
he meant. DOS.
It's like saying Rolls Royce is like a Pinto. No,
oh,
no.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. Bash is way more capable than DOS.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree. But yeah. What we did say was that DOS stole many of the features from Bash is what we're actually saying.
Yeah.
We're not saying that they're comparable in any way whatsoever. No, no DOS is no. Bash no. is much more capable.
Oh.
And the Z Shell is actually an enhancement of Bash. Mm-hmm. So if you have Bash, you still have, if you have Z Shell, I believe all the Bash commands work. Mm-hmm. You just have some extra ones that I, so far at least, don't particularly
haven't come
care
across
about.
Yet.
I don't care about. I just, yeah. they don't do me any good. But, well, I'm also, even with my arthritis, I'm still a pretty fast typist. So I don't need some of the shortcuts that they have.
Well, like I say, that's the other thing great about the internet, though, you folks. And I'm sure whether it's computing or whatever you want to do, you can usually go to YouTube and find a video and an instructional video on how to do it. And I mean, that's everything from working on your car to repairing this or that, and it's just there. And how accustomed we have gotten to just always go into that. To do right. things, you know, I mean, a lot of folks are taking it upon themselves to fix this or fix that or do this or do that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I just sat there because at any point you can stop the video, take notes or rewind it, go back and forth. So, you know, again, it's made our lives a lot simpler. And
I've been, like I said, learning Python, and I found a site called Socratica, and they have a YouTube channel called Learn Python. Duh. And they're excellent, short, precise videos about one small topic. It's great. So when I want to learn about tuples, or I want to learn about lists, or I want to, you know, whatever I want to learn about, I got like 5 to 8 minutes, 3 to 5 minutes generally, on the topic. They give you all the basic information, just enough to get you to the next step and figure out what you're doing. It's pretty amazing. Some nice stuff. YouTube, like I've said before, the last statistic I saw, and it's probably woefully inadequate at this point, the last statistic I saw was 400 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every minute.
I wouldn't doubt it.
400 hours every minute. So I'll guarantee you, you're going to find something cool.
Yeah, and whatever topic that you're interested in.
Right.
It's there.
And you know, there's a lot of junk as well, yeah. But so what? I think it's called Astronaut. I got to look it up now. Astronaut.io, I think is what it's called. Yes. And what they do is they show videos from YouTube that have zero views.
Really?
Yeah, it's so really? Cool. Now, a lot of them are, you know, family videos that nobody's looked at yet, or test videos, or, you know, that sort of fare. But astronaut.io, that's Google. You won't get there from there.
I'm going to go up to the address bar.
Have you ever
used, it will get me okay. there. I just have to click three times.
All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. George, as you know, has retired. So for the moment, there is no German show following us. We'll be having jazz music. What an innovation for a jazz station. But don't go away, because it's great music, and it's soothing and calming, and the sort of music you want to listen to while you're learning Python. But we'll be... We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we can continue into our 31st year. Soundbites right here on the great Jazz 90.1. Be good to each other, and we will see you in just 166 hours.